Okay, so I'm going to be offering the bulk of what I'm trying to bring forth will be contained in the talk that's in the middle, set between two short practices, exercises, meditative explorations. In a way, I'm conceiving of this all as part of a whole. So using meditative instructions as a way to kind of open up some perspectives on generally what I'll be teaching about. So I say that in case the practices might seem too short, if there's something interesting that's opening within them, I would recommend you then kind of revisit what opened in that practice, allow it to unfold more helpfully. And also to say that the practices are not necessarily going to be pleasant. Part of what I'm offering in the talk is something about finding our own relationship to a kind of not knowing, groundlessness, or the kind of lack of mastery. I'm calling it a kind of awkwardness that is in some ways asked of us if we are to look at this endeavor of practice, using these insight ways of looking as ways that move us beyond conventional perception. Yeah, we kind of necessarily will have to set down the ways we normally do things and these ways we normally perceive and conceive. So that's a little bit of what the exercises are for. So just to kind of say that, and I'll go ahead and introduce then the first practice. In a way, it's a kind of exploration, a little slice of an exploration about the way that the self sense is continually defined and redefined by what it's in relationship to. And I'll be using the premise of kind of ways of practicing that cultivate equanimity or that encourage one to set down or to relax the relationship of clinging. So in the context of Rob's teachings, that would be a lot of what's found in the dukkha practices, the chapter on the dukkha method. So that'll be the kind of starting point, but kind of tuned towards discovering ways we might release a bit more in terms of the self-sense. The inspiration for the practice was a quote from Zen master Linji. In Japanese, his name is said as Rinzai, so very well-known Zen teacher. This is the statement. There is a true person of no rank. He is always leaving and entering the portals of your face. So something about that is about what is the a true person of no rank? What is a person who's not established by its relationship to phenomena? Yeah. This is a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh that kind of expands on that particular quote. And he uses the translation, true person of no position. So this is the quote. The word position in person of no position is often understood to mean our status in society. In this case, it also means our exact location in space and time. The true person without position can't be located in space and time. This doesn't mean the true person isn't there. It's just that the true person can't be grasped. The Buddha can't be grasped. The Tathagata cannot be found in form, nor outside form, nor in feelings, perceptions, mental formations, or consciousness. Nor does the Tathagata transcend form, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Yeah, so again, different ways of talking about this process of the self-sense being established through the relationship to phenomena. So we'll go ahead and explore. It will be, I don't know, 10 minutes, maybe a little bit more. So taking the first few minutes of the practice session to settle. If it feels it would be helpful to make any adjustments to one's meditation posture, you're invited to do that. If it feels helpful to relax the body, to maybe check into the body, noticing if there's areas of unnecessary tension, just releasing what is easy to release. If it feels you need to support the settling of a busy mind, you can do that in the way that feels helpful. Coming into contact with the breath, the sense of the whole of the body. Just settling, collecting. From this place, whatever degree of settledness has come about, just allowing the attention to
Man,
open
he's still
broadly.
on.
Just allowing the attention to open broadly. Not trying to put it into a certain shape. Something more like freeing it of the need to take any particular shape. Sensitive, alive attention, open to whatever shows up to be known, to be sensed. Maybe the attention is receiving different impressions here and there. Maybe it's receiving more of a sense of the wholeness of experience. Either is really fine. Just let it open as it will, sense as it will. finding your own way towards a stance of disentanglement, a stance of equanimity, not so pushed, not so pulled by what arises. You may have a way to do this or to approach this from your own practice. A stance of holy disinterest, perhaps. Some way of relaxing the relationship to clinging that feels helpful for you. You may have within your practice the possibility of relaxing the body, the field of the body, in response to sensations, phenomena that's arising. May just simply be holding the attention to let go of entanglement. Letting go is letting be. Releasing that entanglement. And within this place of practice, which may be a familiar place of practice for you, dropping in a question, opening a line of investigation. Asking whether through holding this way of practicing, am I holding or building something in the sphere of the self sense? It doesn't need to be there. Well, that can be released. Who holds the attitude of holy disinterest or non-entanglement. Can the Holy One be released as well? The holder of the disinterest. Can the relationship to experience be relaxed without establishing a relaxed person? The poise of non-becoming, the poise of non-doing. Just a light and playful exploration. It's just an asking of the questions. Not demanding anything to happen or shift or be a certain way. Just equanimity. Not becoming more equanimous. Maybe there's a sense that the phenomena relaxes its relationship towards us. Just lightly exploring the setting down, the demand to hold, to do, to direct, to become. taking just a minute or so to continue to explore in this direction. Or if you'd like to close the exercise for yourself by coming back more to the sensations of the body, the world of sights and sounds, you're welcome to do that. All right. So again, the practices I'm offering today are I'm offering them in one way primarily to support the teaching that I'm offering. And if there's something that's useful within them, there's probably not the time to explore that direction. So I am now recording this and I'll put it up. If there's something you'd like to come back to, you're very much invited to do that. But we'll continue on, and there will be a chance if people have questions or want to share reflections at the end, can maybe come back to something. But I'll go ahead and give the talk. And sorry, I still have a little, my voice is like not 100%, but so I apologize for the throat clearing. I'll begin the teaching portion of what I'm offering today. And again, something about holding this word fading in one way. This kind of that's a concern that I feel runs through the way that Rob taught insight practice for different reasons. So I'll be talking about that. And again, something about coming to a place of the word that I kind of was working with is awkwardness. Maybe we could say coming into contact with the unknown and kind of finding a way to hang out there. For me, that idea is very much related to holding these ways of practicing, these insight ways of looking, these ways of exploring fabrication as a kind of movement beyond conventional perception. It is necessarily, if our practice is progressing at all, is going to put us up right up on the edge of that which we do not know how to habitually navigate somehow. So speaking a little bit to those things today, it's not habitual, it's not natural, it's not normal to ask our being to do something very differently than the way we've habitually conceived and perceived and related through this kind of establishing of a self here, phenomena here, relationship of clinging, determining what the relationship is something to push away or something to pull towards me. Yeah. So these practices are all asking us to do something differently. This is a quote from Seeing That Frees. It is from the chapter on the Dukkha method, or the different approaches that are contained within that chapter. So some of that I was playing with in the first practice. Here's the quote. It should also become apparent with respect to the concerns that some have regarding doing in meditation that rather than a practice of doing more, it is in fact a practice of doing less. So these practices, this body, this way of practicing, there are a range of practices that support one to do less. Back to the quote. Clinging is actually something we do. In this way of looking, releasing clinging, we are letting go of doing. We have deep habits of clinging that we are unaware of, and letting them go feels unfamiliar at first and takes a little work. Doing so involves, however, less doing than our normal state of citta involves, left to itself to follow its habitual impulses. So it's an interesting quote for a couple of reasons. He's probably primarily his intention in making that statement was about, this, aren't we supposed to stop doing stuff in meditation? And then there's this huge book with 97 practices. And so it's just expressing that these practices are a support to somehow learn to move in other ways, to work in other ways. I think I gave the quote in one of these sessions. It was a quote from Meister Eckhart. It was something like, "In unknowing knowing, we know God." You can look at this whole path of practice as the art of unknowing knowing in a way. It's setting down the habitual in order for something else to open. Probably the reason I particularly pulled this quote is the part where he is saying that letting these habits go at first feels unfamiliar and takes a little work. I would probably say it is a continual companion on our path of practice in different ways with different aspects of the self sense, different aspects of phenomena. We're always going to be put in this place of this, we're asked to do something differently. We're asked to be put in a place of uncertainty or something like for me the idea of like a lack of mastery. It's just the all the ways you might be masterful are taken away from you. I think Rob's way of articulating practice, talking about practice was very elegant. I clearly get a sense of his mastery in the way that he talks about, I guess, the way he talked about anything, but that comes through in the way he conveyed practice. And there can be a, there can easily be an impression that I'm going to learn this practice that he articulated. I'm going to master it. I'm going to master this practice from beginning to end. But functionally, you can look at, and maybe I think it's very helpful to look at these practices as ways to deliver us to a point of a kind of non-mastery. That's the function of them. That's the direction of them. So something, it's human nature to want to kind of get something right, to want to do the practice I have that energy very strongly in myself. I want to do it right. I want to do things perfectly. But there's something within these practices, in a way, they're holding us so that we may learn to stop the pushing, the shaping, the finessing, the transforming. Along this spectrum of conventional perception, where we have our skills. So that's part of what I'm offering today. And I'll come back at the second half of the talk with a series of quotes that for me kind of talk something about this point or range of points at which we must diverge from the way we habitually relate to experience. So hopefully that will be helpful. Largely everything I'm talking about today, I think one reason I felt a need to present it all as a kind of whole is that I'm talking about things that are kind of hard to talk about. So it's almost better to kind of talk around them in different ways and even to include different voices, which I'll do with the quotes. Part of both talking about this kind of poise of a kind of awkwardness or uncertainty, as well as talking about the kind of, I don't know, what is challenging about this idea of fading. These are both points that relate to what for me is a kind of central characteristic of Rob's particular approach, something that makes it, what it is and particularly distinct. It's something about the fact that he is encouraging and offering a kind of gradual exploration. Yeah, he held out a kind of framework, which we could have sort of in the background of our practice, but also something we would continually come back to as we practice different methods, different techniques, in order to open and deepen our understanding. So it's this exploration of fabrication, this possibility that we can kind of check in, evaluate what is happening to the self sense and what is happening to phenomena as we gain skill in releasing clinging. Yeah. So this idea that in a way we're kind of tuned into the possibility of phenomena fading in different ways and supporting the deepening of that exploration. Other ways I've practiced other Vipassana methods, it's not so much that kind of framing of how we might gain understanding and then practicing and then this kind of back and forth. It's more like this is gross simplification, but it's something more like this is the practice and do it. Don't ask a lot of questions and just continue. Yeah. I'm actually not going to make a case for which way of practicing is better. Instead, I'm going to kind of look at maybe some of the challenges that come from the way Rob conveyed practice because folks here are working with it. So why, what's on offer with what the way that Rob presented practice, the way he framed it, is the possibility that one can gain wisdom, understanding, one can increase one's conviction in the emptiness of phenomena or understand something about how experience is fabricated all along the way. Yeah, it's not like a, practice for years and hope for the best. It's here, I'm giving you a way to look at what is happening, to interpret, to understand, in the service of your own deepening. It makes it an all, not an all or nothing kind of approach, which certainly has its advantage, as well to the degree in which our conviction in emptiness of this aspect of experience or that phenomena or this aspect of the self-sense, to whatever degree that deepens, it supports our ability to let go. Supports our ability to pick up these practices and continue. Yeah. So, a lot of wisdom in that. The kind of challenge is we're given something up front that we cannot help but sort of conceptualize about. We cannot help but sort of interpret from whatever place we're at. And that will come into how we think about practice, and that will also come in on the cushion. Yeah. So, that's one of the challenges that I think comes from his way of teaching practice. We become, for better and for worse, we become tuned into, kind of keyed into noticing experiences of fading, softening, opening, releasing in different ways. So I'll talk a little bit about the word fading, which he has, he uses other terms in the book, but there's something about that way of talking about the fading of perception that, I don't know, kind of rises to the top for me. And it's certainly very much at the top of when I talk to other people practicing within his way of practicing. It's that's the language that's used. It feels to me that it is always helpful to look at these practices. To talk about these practices as practicing ways that allow us to withdraw the supports of conventional perception. That feels always helpful. It doesn't feel like it kind of goes into different dead ends. Or this idea of the pacification of perception, that is a phrase that that way of wording this exploration is from Nagarjuna. It's also present in Seeing That Freeze. That feels to me always kind of a helpful thing to hold. Somehow that kind of represents for me what is a consistent and live thread of investigation, yeah, that one can hold. But if I say, talk about practice, and I talk about this aspect of experiencing fading or that one fading, a sensation fades, a sight, a sound, some aspect of the self sense, one may be able to kind of hold it in this the sense of this wider exploration, but most likely the just in the hearing of that, the mind sort of starts to build different images, different possibilities. What does something fade into? Does it fade into nothing? What's nothing like? What is nothing, is it kind of black, or is it cavernous, or is it unconsciousness? Or if something becomes transparent, what's it transparent into? It's like this kind of activity will just kind of naturally happen when there's kind of information given up front. It will become part of how the terrain of how we have to practice. Sometimes the mind will build images and directions that might feel scary, or one may kind of bring in past meditative experiences one has had that have been awesome or wonderful, but still kind of like trying to push it into a way of thinking about what one is trying to open on the cushion. So it happens when we talk about meditative practice. It happens when we think retrospectively about our practice, when we evaluate certain experiences. And it also happens kind of on the cushion, as we're practicing. So it's something to navigate. I'm sure that, those of you practicing with his methods, as probably all of you here, you've touched different experiences of softening, of fading, of opening, of aspects of experience becoming less substantial. When that happens, just part of the process is almost necessarily it's going to be kind of reclaimed. Those experiences will be kind of reclaimed in some way or interpreted by the processes of conventional perception. So I guess one point I want to say is like that's totally normal. It's part of the process. I don't have like the one good tip to stop that from happening. I think it's the nature of the beast, to some degree. But I think being aware of that and just kind of like holding that as part of the exploration in itself is helpful. Seeing like we're going to, these are shifting sands we're navigating. It's not going to be just some sort of straight directional easy line. It's we're working with the minds that we have, and that will sort of necessitate. Well, it will sort of necessitate a kind of continual navigation with that aspect of the mind and the way the mind works. I will say, in addition to just kind of being aware of that, there's a couple directions that are different that are available as we practice that are kind of always helpful to lean into. One that Rob gives really consistently in the instructions is to appreciate, notice, lean into any sense of ease or freedom that opens through the practice. So that direction, that I would call something like a live wire to follow. It's we can kind of lean to that, let that have some space in our consciousness, and that will kind of work against maybe other ways that kind of doors are closing or the mind is wanting to solidify or reify things. Something else I'll add is for me, it's certainly within my own practice, and I find it can be helpful to emphasize with others, is to develop an appreciation for the differentness or the newness of experience. I think it was, I can't remember which talk, I think it was in more than one talk, where Rob would kind of talk about the possibility of kind of becoming enamored with the breaking of boxes, the breaking of containers, moving into new, as certain fixated ways we relate to experience are broken open. It's almost like to lean into that movement of the opening, to sort of develop a taste for that. That's a live wire that one can follow as well. one might have with this term fading, for example. It's possible. I know I had this in different ways. Some kind of impression that there's like a master dimmer switch that through our practice it sort of gets pulled. Even after having lots of different kinds of experiences of fading, I think I still held that in kind of encountering the languaging of this. Sometimes that impressions and experiences and perceptions that can line up with that can happen. More likely to happen with particular ways of practicing, I would say. But sometimes what happens is just a perception that is very different. You know, this is very different. This is not how it usually works. For me, I kind of interpret that some aspect of this relationship of clinging, some aspect of the self-sense, some aspect of how one is holding phenomena or phenomena is showing up, softens in a way that is quite noticeable or is very salient within the field of experience, while at the same time the mind is still kind of holding tight on a bunch of other stuff, and what you get is something that's just quite different. Yeah. For me, kind of being tuned into the differentness and appreciative of that, and kind of holding that as part of what I'm seeking to engender through practice, it was really helpful. And maybe along with that, something of a sense of surprise became a kind of reliable thread for me to follow. So some sense that whatever has opened is not how I could have envisioned it. I began to kind of get accustomed to that too. And when I had, it's something like a kind of, not necessarily a clear thought, but some recognition, like this is just not how I could have imagined it. That for me began to be a kind of clue to try to stop seizing on what was opening in the practice. So it's like, I would just kind of like use that as a clue to like call off the dogs and try to let go that part of the mind that is trying to really fixate or understand or establish. So yeah, that's some things, the appreciating the sense of ease and freedom that opens, appreciating newness, kind of aligning with the movement of going beyond our sense of how things are, how they work, how they seem. All of the everything's going to be happening. We're going to be, having certain perceptions, noticing them, interpreting them, and at the same time, these other things are opening. So I'm just suggesting that it is of value to lean into those threads that kind of continue on and go deeper. Certainly, we may encounter, I hope we encounter, a range of perceptions that have some sense of meaningfulness or beauty and different mystical perceptions that can open. Yeah. So, not saying that is not of value. I don't know, to us as human beings, to touch these kind of states that are less fabricated, kind of otherworldly. That in itself has a value. But maybe also to include the possibility that one is leaning in these other directions that go beyond, yeah, that allow for continual opening. Yeah, I have a note. I don't know if this, for me, it's helpful, so I'll say it. Something about looking at our practice, encouraging the possibility of relating to it as process and not so much product. Yeah, sort of seeing it as such. Process being a kind of, yeah, following the threads of the sense of freedom opening, following the sense of the movement beyond the opening of what was fixated, or at least keeping that alive in the investigation, and kind of holding the possibility that getting too fixated on a sense of destination will probably not pan out well. Yeah. Okay. So I think I'll go to my quotes as a way to close what I'm offering. The first is actually a quote that's just kind of supporting what I'm saying in some ways. It's a quote from the Buddha. And he's talking about this movement towards the unfabricated, or he's talking about the unfabricated. I'm kind of generally talking about this process of moving towards less fabrication, moving towards the unfabricated, where all phenomena are removed, all ways of speaking are removed as well. Yeah. So retrospectively, we will interpret, understand, hold certain experiences, but it's also kind of keeping alive this sense that the fullness of it can't be captured. Yeah, that we're this is a practice of somehow learning to set down the ways of speaking, the ways of seeing, the ways of perceiving that we habitually do. Just for the sake of fullness, I'll also put in a quote where the Buddha is talking about the unfabricated in positive terms. And those are sort of the two ways that he talk about the unfabricated, using the language of negation, you know, how it cannot be captured, how it cannot be spoken of, et cetera, et cetera. But this is just a kind of a way he would sometimes use a kind of list of different synonyms to talk about something that can't be put into a single concept. It is the unformed, the unconditioned, the end, the truth, the other shore, the subtle, the everlasting, the invisible, the undiversified, peace, the deathless, the blessed, safety, the wonderful, the marvelous, nibbana, purity, freedom, the island, the refuge, the beyond. So in some ways I can look at that list and see it as like a partially a list of kind of pointing to I don't know, the goodness of it, the wonderfulness of it, the you know, these kind of very very positive terms. And in other some of the other languaging, you know, the undiversified, the unconditioned. These are talking about the unformed. Yeah, the ways that this direction can't be captured through the tools of conventional perception, comparison, evaluation, distinction, separation, all of that. All right. So something about a range as necessary to describe something that can't be kind of pinned down in a singular way, the mind can pick up. So the rest of the quotes that I'll offer, I've chosen because for me, they in some ways they talk about this point of a kind of poise of awkwardness or sort of facing, being asked to navigate beyond the ways we habitually do. In some ways, there's also something in these particular quotes that for me work as meditation instructions. Yeah. Somehow. So the first is a quote from Thomas Merton, who was a Christian mystic. He was also very well versed in Zen practice, so certainly had exposure to Buddhist teachings. But to each of us, there is a point of nowhereness in the middle of movement, a point of nothingness in the midst of being, the incomparable point, not to be discovered by insight. If you seek it, you do not find it. If you stop seeking it, it is there, but you must not turn to it. Once you come aware of yourself as a seeker, you are lost. But if you are content to be lost, you will be found without knowing it, precisely because you are lost, for you are at last nowhere. So something about setting down the established sense of self, the identity as seeker is kind of how he's pointing to it. There's something in the line, but you must not turn to it. Yeah, there's something there about talking about opening in ways that you cannot grasp, you cannot seize, you cannot see with the conventional ways one sees things, etc. So I quite like that. This is a very famous quote from Zen Master Dogen. You should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illuminate yourself. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will be manifest. So he's using this idea of the original face, you know, it's the ungraspable aspect of we could say who we are or what everything is. It's the idea of the original face, the face you had before you were born. There's something here in this, what reads to me as instruction is something about learning the backward step, learning a way to move that is not into things. And through learning to move that way, you know, the way he describes it is body and mind of themselves will drop away. Yeah, it's not something one does, but it's actually in the releasing. Then the releasing of those things happens. This is a quote, last quote from Tenasaro Bhikkhu. It's from a talk. I think it was from a Q&A. It's something I found like online on a message board. And it just, I don't know, for me, it was incredibly helpful. So I'm just sharing it here because it's sort of about this poise of groundlessness in a way. He's talking about concentration practice or talking about jhana practice as it kind of dovetails into insight. So that's roughly what he's speaking about. And you begin to notice that there are certain things you do that are going to raise the stress level, just minor things at this point in your concentration. And you say, I'm going to stop doing that. And then you stop doing that. And that will take you to another level of concentration. So you go through the levels of concentration this way. Finally, you get as far as you can go in concentration. And you begin to realize the question comes up. There is stress if I stay here, but there's going to be stress if I move. And this is where it gets paradoxical. You neither stay nor move. There's no intention either way because you realize whichever way you intend, there's going to be stress. And it's in that moment of non-intention that things open up. So again, I chose a range of ways of talking and a range of quotes to kind of talk about something that is very hard to talk about. There you go. Yeah. So that's the bulk of, let me see how we're doing time wise. Maybe we'll go ahead and do the last practice together. Just take 10 minutes or so. And again, maybe the primary intention with this practice is to just ask one to do something slightly different with a familiar way of practicing and see what that opens up. And also is just a little bit to play with this idea of what is it to kind of hang out in a place of less expertise, less knowing where to go. Yeah. The practice this is based on, this little exploration, is anatta practice, working with that way of looking, that lens, impermanence practice. So hopefully that'll be like a common ground that people at least have some familiarity with. So just taking a minute or two to connect to the body, the posture. encouraging a little degree of samadhi in whatever way feels most available to you. And again, just releasing our attention, our awareness to be open to our experience. Just open to whatever is coming in through the six sense gates. The sounds, the body sensations, visual impressions, maybe smells, maybe thoughts. And meeting what is arising with a particular interest in the impermanence of that aspect of experience. Being concerned with the arising and the passing of sensations. Different aspects of phenomena. Maybe a sense of beginnings and endings within the presence of a given sensation or aspect of experience. Fluctuation, variation. Little gaps within what seems consistent. Just sensitive in that way, tuned in that way. Just privileging that way of noticing. The starting, the stopping, the fluctuation. And now narrowing the emphasis, shifting the emphasis a little bit more, and prioritizing the noticing of the ending of sensations. Becoming particularly tuned into those. Maybe something about the way that within a given sound or body sensation, There's the appearance and the disappearance, the fluctuation, being more tuned in to the disappearance, the lessening, the decrease. And as one does this, as one particularly tunes into the lessening, the absence, very lightly holding the question, where did it go? Not to find an answer to the question. Instead, simply allowing the question to tune the attention further. To guide the noticing. Allowing it to tune the attention to the point of departure for this sensation or that sensation. It's almost allowing the attention to ask that question, allowing the noticing. The sensitivity to ask the question, where did you go? Where has it gone? This light holding of the question, not seeking an answer, is more a way of witnessing or listening. So not so much tuned into the sensation itself, and not so much seeing the ending as an attribute of a given sensation. Possible that holding this question, this way of being sensitive, may shift the way that other aspects of phenomena are noticed as they arise. May open some sense of stillness or ease. If it does, appreciating that. Or it may simply put one in a place of questioning without answer. No right experience. Instead, just a light exploration of leaning into a familiar practice a different way. Again, I'll ring the bell in a minute or so. You can choose for yourself how to close this period of practice. What would be supportive of transitioning to a period of speaking? Maybe coming back to the physicality of the body. Maybe connecting to a wish that our efforts, our practice be a benefit to others.